AV Nation is brought to you by Shure, because every voice matters.
Well, congratulations to you, first of all,
yes,
for taking over as director or chairperson?
Chair.
Chair, yeah. Okay. Congratulations on that. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Mr. Simpson, your silence will only incriminate you further. No, Mr. Simpson, don't take your anger out on me. Get back. Mr. Simpson, no! Dramatization may not have happened.
On this episode, we discuss security, system ownership, and Hetma's birthday, all that and more on EdTech. EdTech episode 117, Security Breach. Hello, AV friends, and welcome to another episode of EdTech. As always, we have our panel of awesome higher ed AV professionals. Ernie Bailey. Hey, Ernie.
Hey, Aaron. Glad to be with you again.
And Rob Raspberry.
Hey, Aaron. Always glad to be here.
And Scott Tyner.
Hey, everyone. Always fun to be here.
And today's special guest joining us for this episode is Kevin Chan from UC Berkeley. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Aaron, and glad to be here.
Please tell everyone what you do over there.
Absolutely. I am the senior manager of the Classroom Technology Services team at UC Berkeley. And so my team, many members, including lots of student staff, takes care of over 200 general assignment classrooms in Berkeley, as well as help consult and do whatever we can to help all of the other learning spaces on campus. And we do many more things than that, but I'll stop there because, you know, brevity is great.
All right. So this week, let's jump into our stories. So the first one that we'll discuss came from avnation.tv. Video conference security compromised with a German call. How do we keep our system secure? Like, how do we keep the snoopers out?
We pay them. No, I'm just kidding. So this article I found pretty interesting because it sort of was dealing with, you know, Microsoft and stuff like that. But, you know, it's interesting when the pandemic hit and Zoom came right out of the gates, everyone was so happy. This is the greatest thing ever. And then security concerns happened. And so, you know, it became really evident that, you know, end-to-end encryption is very important, or at least encryption to the point where nobody can interrupt the call. Like with our Zoom, like, you know, having people sign in by SSO for identification. There's a number of things that you need to do to make sure that, you know, you're on a call with, you know, a reputable, I guess, participant. So, you know, I don't know how it works with other organizations. I'm sure there's other ways to do, you know, security and encryption of that sort. But I guess you start right there.
Yeah. You know, we are usually, at least on the academic side, more concerned with things coming in, not someone stealing what we're discussing. You know, we watch out for the Zoom bombers and all that. Now, we're a health science campus, so we also have to deal with patient confidentiality, HIPAA compliance, and all that. And we do use encrypted platforms for that. And, you know, they are externally certified as being secure between the patient and the healthcare provider they're talking to. We've never had, to my knowledge, anybody break in and steal patient information during a call. I guess it could happen, but it's not. I mean, we're, like I said, we basically rely on our platform providers, whether it's we don't use, even though Zoom is HIPAA compliant, we do not use Zoom for that. But we do have several platforms that we use that are all certified HIPAA compliant, encrypted. And we make sure, you know, we have all sorts of rules for our staff, that, you know, is what they can use and what can be discussed on what platforms. and things like that. But I mean, this is, you know, this article's taking it to a whole different level, you know, military security and national security, things like that. So I don't want to think about that one.
Thankfully, we're just in academics. We don't have military secrets to keep. You know, I actually come from a DevOps background, so information security is very important. I actually literally transitioned into more directly the AV world right at the start of the pandemic. So, you know, I think from an information security point of view, the thing that stands out is like, you know, they talked a little bit about the, like, someone questioned why this sensitive topic was discussed on WebEx. So, you know, to Ernie's point, you know, there's a lot of training, and I think information security has come a long ways now, where the greatest vector is generally not the device or the software itself, it's really the people. And that's really a hard vector for any large organization to train and make sure everyone's doing it and, you know, create some safeguards that even if someone, you know, perhaps, you know, through all of their training, our the hackers and people who's trying to steal our information is always going to be a little bit ahead, you know, we can still find some ways to gate that in a proactive measurement. I think the other thing that, you know, I want to recognize is, you know, when I stepped into the AV world, I'm like, hey, these AV vendors are not really on top of their IT security. And, you know, maybe WebEx is great, but what's running WebEx? Is that device secure? Is it running some old Windows version? So obviously that's not in the article, but that's the other thing that I think AV, the AV industry has caught up a lot, especially with the pandemic pushing everything to remote and video conferencing, and they've had to learn a lot. So I've seen a lot of improvements, but I think some of the traditional AV kind of hardware vendors are still lagging behind on that aspect.
Yeah, Kevin, I think that the couple of things that struck me are similar to you. One is we can never do enough training and education to the people who are using these systems. And it has to go beyond some of the basics to really help them understand. They say end-to-end encryption to somebody. What they have, it goes right over. It does, not that they're smart enough, but they don't even care what that means. All they hear is, I'm telling you this is okay to do, where I think we might have to get to that point where they start to understand what that means. And then what does it mean when somebody calls into that call and does that end that encryption? Like you said, and the article said, what do you discuss on these formats and what do you not discuss on these formats? And then finally, we all have to pay more attention to security, because this, I read this as one of two things. Either somebody from the German government recorded this and leaked it, which I hope that's not the case for that person, or this was intercepted, which means that they somehow got into an account some other way. So seems to me to be a WebEx security hole, most likely. And in the end, in that case, we can say all we want, why did you talk about that? But in the end, somebody's pointing the finger at us because we told them to go ahead and use WebEx. So we had to be much, much more aware of that. The other thing that just kind of stuck out to me that I want to read a little bit more about, and I know a few people here are Zoom experts, is this idea of an audio watermark that somehow tells the person listening who recorded it and leaked it. And I've actually never heard that, and I don't know if that's actually a function that Zoom has. Because I don't know, maybe WebEx has it because their stuff gets recorded and leaked. I don't know, but I've never heard of it. So I got to do some more research into that.
Yeah, this article certainly is a huge reminder to us all that, like, we need to make sure that we're being secure from top to bottom, that we're always doing the updates when they're available and things like that. And also, yeah, and back to like the training of the users and making sure that through their accounts, they're keeping their passwords strong and whatnot, because we could do everything correct and then someone has a weak password and somebody could go in and look at their recordings and be like, oh, what's that? And, you know, luckily in higher ed, you know, a lot of the things that we deal with are lower stakes. It's more intellectual property that becomes then, you know, the more the issue. But campuses all over the place, I'm sure, do have government funding. So they have certain calls with government agencies and DOD and whatnot. So they, you know, it's still important that we stay on top of it. And also, if you want to hear more about this topic, I was actually a guest on AV Week episode 656, where we did a...
Hi, this is Jennifer Goodyear.
And Erica Carroll.
From the Women in AV podcast, where we are encouraged by the incredible stories of women in AV.
Listen in on fun, empowering conversations as we chat with inspiring women, breaking barriers and creating their own path in the industry.
Check out Women in AV on avnation.tv or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discussion about this topic. So our next story came to us from avinteractive.com. Do small and medium-sized MTRs belong to AV or IT? In the first of a series of extracts from AV Magazine's Microsoft Teams Rooms Roundtable, they asked whether AV skills are needed in small and medium-sized rooms. So, you know, that leads to the question, like, in our worlds, who owns those, you know, small and medium-sized room systems? Is AV, IT, kind of a mix of everybody?
On my campus, it's AV. And I think it should be. You know, we get into situations where, you know, there's glass walls all the way around. How do you light? How do you make sure the people are seen? You got sound bouncing off of hard surfaces. You know, it's not just putting a speakerphone out and a webcam, you know. It's a true AV product, I think, once you put in you put in a sound bar and a more expensive camera. You make it where the whole room is interactive. Everybody can be seen and heard. There are a lot of AV factors that come in, you know, like they're the acoustic. You know, you may have hard walls. We help people, put a flag up in a corner or hang some sort of tapestry on the wall, you know, or relight the room or put up shades, whatever. Make sure that, you know, you do have the right sound bar, microphone, camera for the size room. You know, if you get, you know, we found that we use about four or five different sound bars, you know, for a slightly different size room. And we can make it where, you know, you look, I mean, if you're in an educational platform and you're needing to share information, you need to look professional, to look like you know what you're talking about. I think the appearance is very important, or it would just be a telephone call. You need to be able to share information. You need to be able to make sure that you have the proper connections from your computer or camera if you're pointing at a whiteboard, that it's set up properly. So I think, yes, it's an AV world, whether it's a Teams room, a Zoom room. Here we build agnostic spaces. It can be Zoom for 1 hour, and the next hour it can be Teams, or it may be a standalone presentation room, and that can be for a room that seats five or six people up to several hundred. So we treat them all the same. We don't say, this is just a small room, just see what you can throw in it. No, we review the room and put in the proper equipment to meet the needs of the user. That's what an AV professional is there for.
I agree with Ernie, particularly in higher ed. As I'm reading this article, though, I think when they talk about small to medium, and then they talked about a 30 person room, I'm like, I don't know that I consider a 30 person meeting room either small or medium. Like that's getting to be a big room when you're stuffing 30 people in there. But my struggle is this: if you've got this small conference room that takes four or five people, I don't know. In many cases, I think an IT person can hang a monitor on a wall and connect Zoom to it. And I don't know what that line is. That's why I struggle. And certainly if I had to support it, I don't care if it's four people or 30 people. I want to do it because I'm going to get the call when they say, how come that person at the end of the table can't be seen or heard? But it's that whole article was interesting. And then I thought it was great because at the very, very end, they talk about a number of the things that you need to do in a room to make sure that it functions better. So to me, you had to draw these lines about what's small and what's medium. Four or five people, I mean, pretty much anybody can do that. I think when you start getting beyond that, you do start needing expertise that the IT teams may not have.
Yeah, you know, I think I agree with, you know, Ernie and Scott. In higher ed contexts, it's more likely that the AV team is the right people to lead this kind of work. It takes a lot of different understanding of technology. There's a lot of overlap between IT and AV. We have facilities involved. You know, we have all kinds of concepts and information and expertise we actually have to bring in together in order to achieve even these small and medium in a successful and repeatable manner. And I think, you know, whichever group can bring these people in and understand is really the answer. So it's kind of neither and both. But in higher ed, I think the key here is that, you know, who is the closest to the people who are using the spaces? And typically, you are going to see the AV team, especially from a teaching and learning area. They're traditionally more of the ed tech focused, academic tech focused area. So they tend to be the folks who can really bring the different groups together, assuming they have good relationship with IT or even know what IT is. Then yes, it makes a lot of sense. But really, it takes a whole village and community to do this now. Everything that we do basically is about collaboration and bringing in the expertise, and no one group's going to really know it all, but they need to know and build those relationships to bring the right people in.
Yeah, I think Kevin just hit on something that I was really thinking about is the AV team does tend to be much more like end user focused. It's not necessarily that the IT isn't. They obviously, they have their customers that they work with, but their support model tends to be way different than what AV's is. Like, we get a call from a classroom, we are instantly out, you know, either we're fixing it on the phone or we're heading right to the classroom to take care of it. Whereas our IT group is mostly, you submit a ticket, they will follow up with you to take care of it. Whereas if someone's using a medium-sized meeting room with, and their call's not going through, they're going to want to call AV to come and take care of it and not have to submit a ticket and wait till someone can come and help them. And I think that's sort of like where it happens most, like on my campus. Like, our central IT team, they got into the business. They used to be in the business of like the hard codecs, the Polycoms, the Cisco like rooms. So it made sense at that point for them to kind of be responsible for that things. But then as UCC has grown and become much more of an AV kind of centric thing, we're now finding these gray areas where they're like, oh, our customers want us to put in these rooms or these systems. And we're like, okay, but did you consider all of the things that like Ernie was mentioning? And they're kind of like, oh, not so much. They were just like, we plug it in, we hang it up, we done. But then it also comes down to then the support model, which in some spaces, even though they installed, we support because we can show up. Whereas, you know, depending on the space, some rooms they can, if one room doesn't work, they're like, oh, well, we'll just use the room across the way because usually there's a couple and one's open. So they can go with a support model where they can put in a ticket and wait for it to, you know, somebody figure it out. But yeah, so in the situations where it's imperative that it work, we are on the hook for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in situations where the CIO will be in a small meeting room and the presentation computer goes out. He calls me. He doesn't call the IT support team that answers directly to him. So, you know.
Absolutely.
That right there tells you who IT thinks it should be.
Right. Yeah. It's like, or unless, like if it is a certain profile of a meeting, like if the president is involved, usually the president's IT support person is there in the meeting with. So they're able to jump on it right away. But yeah, it's kind of like, that's the exception, not the, yeah. the rule, so to speak.
That's the VIP rule.
Right. Absolutely. So this last item comes to us from higheredav.com and is a bit near and dear to my heart. Hetma turns 5. Joey and BC Hatchett sat down to reflect on how far Hetma has come in the last 5 years. So I guess this is a nice opportunity for us to talk about the impact that Hetma's had on higher ed AV.
Well, congratulations to you, first of all,
yes.
To taking over as director or chairperson?
Chair.
Yeah. Okay. Congratulations on that. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to be the newbie. You know, I didn't even know about Hetma until maybe last year, this time. And, you know, I really, as I mentioned, I come from a DevOps world, and in that world, you know, there's been, you know, at least I think most of the vendors and people that you work with do pay attention to the higher ed vertical more specifically. Obviously, there's EDUCAUSE and many other organizations that's higher ed focused. But in the industry, in AV industry, you know, when I stepped into it, I was kind of a little surprised that the higher ed voice wasn't as prominent when, you know, I met with certain vendors. Of course, we are, you know, UC Berkeley is a big customer. You know, when we say, hey, you need to do something, an individual vendor might pay attention to us. But when we talk to our other smaller, you know, colleges and universities, they're like, yeah, we haven't talked to our vendor for like, you know, 5 years. And, you know, I think building this community is kind of the first draw for me. I love that, you know, we're able to, Hetma has been able to build a community from the grassroots and host these different events and really focus on the higher ed vertical. But, you know, I think bringing this community together then can lend this voice so that we can really articulate what our needs are with various hardware, software vendors. You know, maybe someday we'll even get them to set some standards that are reasonable so that you can interoperate, you know, and that's something that has happened in kind of traditional IT world and application development. You know, that's something I like to see more of, you know, and I think Hetma is a way to achieve that kind of goal.
I think any opportunity to bring together people into a community is valuable. And I think that, I'll admit, I'm not fully aware of all the things that Hetma does. One of the things I certainly see they do a lot is that sense of community. And I think that's something that higher ed professionals in the AV world have struggled with for years and years and years. So if it can address that, that's fantastic. I'm curious to see what it can do in the realm of really influencing manufacturers like Kevin has mentioned. So I'm curious to watch over the next 5 years, but certainly it's grown quite a bit since its inception.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with what we've seen from Hetma in its short time. I remember visiting them pre-COVID, just kind of getting things kicked off at what was then Infocom, I guess. It was before the eviction, but it was at the Infocom show anyway. And just getting to meet a few people and stuff like that and seeing how it's evolved. They really kicked it up during COVID when Infocom kind of went away for a year or two. We were able to see a lot of the same information presented through Hetma or co-presented. like Scott said, the community and getting, having a unified voice going to the manufacturers. I've been involved with AVIXA, Infocom, ICIA, and NAVA, all the same organization changed over my 40 years in the industry. And I've seen their participation with higher ed and their support of the higher ed group go up and down over the years. I like seeing an organization that is kind of dedicated to that. That is where AVIXA first started out, but they were more on the sales side. They were working, you know, they were the salespeople for educational technologies. But like I said, I like seeing a unified group that we can talk with and present our information to, and they, you know, HETMA can then kind of lead the way into meetings with manufacturers and say, this is what we need to see, you know, in our products for teaching in higher education. Like I said, I'm excited. I'm really excited about our new leader. I mean, like I said, I've been impressed with what I've seen, and I think it's going to continue to move forward and do more for us.
I am super excited to be able to, take the wheel and be the head of HETMA. I'm extremely proud of all of the things that that we've been able to do over the last couple of years. Because even though technically HETMA is five, the first board of directors was elected 3 years ago, I think. So it's really a lot of the real meat of the, you know, things that have been done have been over the last 3 years. And it's been super exciting to see manufacturers listen to recommendations that were made by, like, through our HETMA approved program to kind of improve some of their products so that it made better sense for the higher ed space. And I'm looking forward to doing more of that and continuing to make sure that, you know, that manufacturers and integrators take, you know, people in the higher ed vertical seriously. It's been so amazing to, from last year, to see last year's Infocom, like anytime I'd walk by a booth or to a booth, people would see education on my badge and they actually wanted to talk, as opposed to my first Infocom, 20 years ago now, where they kind of didn't seem to, you'd see education and they're like,
here's a t-shirt, keep going. Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, I buy stuff too. When I buy stuff, I usually buy a lot of it. So
yeah,
figured they'd want to talk, but it didn't seem like education was really anybody's focus, but, that has been changing over the years, and it's really exciting to see. And it's awesome to have HETMA be part of that. And I'm super excited for our double decker booth this year at Infocom. It'll be a sight to see. But yeah, this has been a fantastic conversation. And unfortunately, Rob lost connection and had to drop off, but that's all right. Started strong. But if anyone wants to get in touch with you, Kevin, how can they do that?
They can find me on LinkedIn, but they might have to type a few more keywords because there's a lot of Kevin Chans that are at UC Berkeley or have been.
And how about you, Ernie?
You can find me on LinkedIn also.
And how about you, Scott?
You can find me on LinkedIn, and you can find me on X at S Tyner over on Rave Pubs.
Awesome. And as for me, you can find me here monthly on the EdTech podcast, as well as on the social media platform formerly known as Twitter, @Smearin_off_ice, on LinkedIn, and you can find me on the HETMA community. And see you next time.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This
is
AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.